I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social. With a new podcast every day of the Premier League season, this is Football Social Daily.
It might be the international break, but the action doesn't stop here on Football Social Daily. We are the only Premier League podcast with a new episode every single day of the season. Hit subscribe now and you'll never miss a show. This is The Dugout, a new Saturday show discussing all the big Premier League talking points with people who have been there and done it. On today's show, we'll take a look at the Three Lions' upcoming game with Andorra. It should be easy enough for England. Gareth Southgate expected to make changes though, and will we see Patrick Bamford given his first England cap? We'll also discuss the phenomenon that is Cristiano Ronaldo and the Premier League's decision to allow him to wear the number 7 shirt. Are shirt numbers really that important to players? We'll find out direct. Plus, 3 games into the top flight campaign, who's been catching our eye so far and who may have choppy waters ahead? I'm Niall McCaughan, and all of that to come on today's show. And in the dugout today, a very warm welcome to former Brighton, Leicester and Southampton man, Dean Hammond. How's things, Dean?
I'm very well, Niall. Thank you very much.
Good to have you with us. And we're also joined by ex-Burnley, Everton and England midfielder Trevor Stephen. Good to have you with us as well. Trev, how are you?
I'm good, Niall. Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me along.
No worries. Really looking forward to today's show. Plenty to get through. But before we start, I just wanted to ask how you've both enjoyed the start of the Premier League season so far. We'll start with you, Dean. It's been a bit of a mixed bag for your old sides so far. How have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it's been a good start. Obviously, having the Premier League back is good. And with Brighton and Southampton and Leicester, former clubs, been quite a good start. You know, Brighton have been improved, I think. I think they're better in front of goal, still creating chances. And 2 wins out of 3 has been good. And with Leicester, a little bit indifferent, a little bit of a potential hangover maybe from not getting into the Champions League, but also winning the FA Cup, winning the Charity Shield. So, you know, 2 wins for them as well. And Southampton are Southampton. You know, they're a good team. They really, really are. They play some good stuff, but they just concede goals, really. But they've got 2 points. And I think the point at Newcastle was very, very important for them. And I'm interested to see how they do this season because I can't quite work it out with them, I must admit.
Yeah, they didn't get beat by 9 against Manchester United, which is always a positive. And that late goal against Newcastle definitely did them some favours. How about you, Trevor? Some really interesting debates around Rafa Benitez's arrival at one of your old clubs, Everton. How do you think he's done so far?
I think he's done great, to be honest with you. I mean, it was a brave step to take, you know, for him to take on the role, take on the job. I actually thought, though, to be honest with you, that he was the best man for the job, you know, of all the candidates that were available. He seemed to just tick all the boxes. Of course, the one negative, if you're an Evertonian, is that he comes with, you know, the baggage of being an ex-Liverpool man. So if you put that aside, I think he was well-suited for the job, particularly as well because he's lived on Merseyside for such a long time and he has been away from Liverpool a long time, you know, as the football club. Mm. So, yeah, I think he's done great. I think he has bought extremely well in the sense of Everton's strategy is just to make some steps of improvement, some consistency. I think they haven't spent very much, which is great. They've had Damari Gray come in and make an impact. Solomon Rondon, Benitez knows him and trusts him from Japan. Had him at Newcastle as well, and Andros Townsend is a seasoned Premier League, you know, performer. So there's been that addition of new blood, and I think every club needs it. I'm not sure if the Everton fans are thrilled with it, and you know, as it sort of stopped in the end, they didn't get Maitland-Niles, for instance, and one or two others didn't sign up. But I think it's good. I think it's really good. I think there's a positivity about Everton now.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Rafa could really have got off to much of a better start. And you could say the same about England at the start of this international break. They saw off Hungary pretty convincingly by 4-0 on Thursday night. Now we're going to look ahead to the game against Andorra, which is the second in the group of three games that they've got in this international window. They've got Poland after this, but Andorra is the next game off the list. Considering the atmosphere and the environment in Hungary, Dean, were you impressed with how England performed in that game? Because it was a very professional performance, 4-0, probably could have been more, but they did what they had to do and got the job done.
Yeah, I thought it was a great performance, really, especially second half. First half, very, very patient, kind of just working out Hungary. Hungary were, you know, defended very, very well first half. England, but like I say, the build-up play was pretty good, but no real WEM product or no creativity. But I thought they showed a really good mentality and a real professional approach second half. You know, they stepped it up a little bit and showed their real quality into in that atmosphere to the way they played out, the way they didn't react, the way they just concentrated on getting the result for themselves as a team and for the country was very, very impressive. And, you know, Jack Grealish was good again. Mason Mount was superb. And, you know, Harry Kane got another goal, could have had 3 or 4, which is, you know, probably the only surprising factor that one-on-one chances he had, you'd really expect him to score. So even though it was a 4-0 result, it could have been 6 or 7. It really, really could have done. But I just enjoyed the way they played. You know, the build-up play, like I say, very possession-based. Hungary did sit off. They weren't much of a threat, but you still have to break them down. And the goals they scored were very, very good. You know, one-touch football, got into good areas, and the pace they attack with, I think they would cause many teams, many international teams, problems. So impressive, and I really like the group. They're building, they're learning all the time, and it's a young group that I think will improve, and it just, you know, put a marker down in the group that they're a serious, serious contender for the World Cup.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I thought Sterling was really good as well in his contributions. He scored one, set up one, looked really lively down the right. Wasn't really bothered by any of the sort of abuse he was getting, which was horrible to see. And unfortunately, it's kind of reared its ugly head again. But job done, as you say, for Gareth Southgate's side. Andorra next up, much weaker opposition than Hungary. Of course, Hungary had the group of death in the Euros and acquitted themselves really well against France, Germany and Portugal, despite the fact they finished bottom of the group. No doubt that they're a tougher opponent than Andorra will be, Trevor. So we could possibly see Southgate make 11 changes for this game. That was what was being hinted at after the fixture. So if that is the case, are there any particular players that you'd like to see given a chance for England?
You know, I'm going to the game actually on Sunday. I'm looking forward to watching England again develop as a team, as a group. And as you say, there's a possibility here for Gareth Southgate to make several changes. I think Patrick Bamford, you know, has been the last two seasons, you know, going to Leeds United. Bielsa has been the making of Patrick Bamford, to be quite honest with you. Patrick's listened to his manager, does what he's told, you know, really. But he is not restricted in his qualities, Bamford. I think it's a great opportunity for him. I'm not quite sure if he'll start, though. Harry Kane's got his sights on, you know, goal records, and I'm not quite sure if Bamford will start. I think he may get on. If England go well, go early, then Bamford might get on at half-time. But he certainly deserves it. You know, he didn't let his head get down. You know, he didn't go to the Euros. There was a good chance that he could go. But, you know, getting that number 9 shirt for England is tough when you've got someone like Harry Kane there, who is, for me, the best all-round striker in the world currently. I know some great talents out there, but as an all-round footballer, Harry Kane ticks all the boxes for me. But I would like to see Bamford get a run out. For sure. I would like to see Jude Bellingham get a good run as well. And I think this is the kind of game that Gareth Southgate can utilise that squad. Quality of the squad is better than it's ever been for England. You can shuffle that pack and you're going to get a really good team performance. And I expect exactly that on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, England, as you say, could shuffle the pack and still field an 11, which will give most European teams a run for their money in any sort of game. So I definitely think it's a great point you make. And also about Harry Kane, you know, he's not just one of the best nines in the world, he's also the England captain. So with that in mind, Dean, if you are someone like Patrick Bamford or Dominic Calvert-Lewin, What's the mentality like knowing that the person who's ahead of you in the pecking order is the captain and one of the best in the world? Is it just a case of when you get a chance, if Patrick Bamford does this weekend, just trying to perform as best as you can and trying to take that?
I think it has to be, Noel. I think there has to be an understanding that, like Trevor mentioned, Harry Kane is, if not one of the best strikers in the world. He's also the captain of the team. He's influential. He has such an impact on the game that if you're coming into the group, you're coming into the squad, that if you do get an opportunity off the bench, that you take it, that you can maybe have an effect on the team, if you can score some goals. I think it'd be very, very difficult to dislodge Harry Kane from that starting position because he is the captain and he's such a brilliant player. And he's in his prime of his career and he always scores goals, always creates chances. So just come into the squad and put yourself in the thinking of Gareth Southgate that, you know, if it's 0-0, if Harry Kane is not performing or he needs to change formation and go two up front, that can you be the next option that's going to come on and help the team? And I think Patrick Bamford has deserved that opportunity. What did he score? 17 goals last season, probably some assists there as well. And he's mobile, he scores different goals, and he is a number nine. I don't think there's many natural number nines in the game now, especially English players. You could probably mention Danny Ings in that conversation as well. So Patrick Bamford is a very good option. But when you're coming into the squad, I think it is understanding that you're going to play second fiddle to Harry Kane and just be aware of that.
It's not a bad crop of strikers that England have got to pick from. You know, the likes of Kane and then DCL, Bamford, Watkins. You mentioned Ings as well. It's a pretty good group they've got of forward players. So it's exciting for the future. There's no doubt about that. And that doesn't even include the young lads like Mason Greenwood, who I think could have a really good career in the Premier League. Obviously, these games are qualifiers for the 2022 World Cup, which is going to take place in December next year in Qatar in the Middle East. And obviously, the World Cup has been moved from the summer to the winter to deal with the extreme heat that they get over there in the Middle East. I know what you footballers are like and how much you love your routines, Trevor. So what's that going to be like, do you think, from a player's perspective, that the World Cup has been moved from the summer to the winter? Do you think that will cause havoc with the way things are scheduled and stuff in this country?
First and foremost, it had to go to winter. When Qatar got that, were awarded the World Cup, the staging of it. It is just ridiculously hot. I've lived in the Middle East for 10 years and I've worked in Qatar for the last 7 years, working on football with BN Sports. So I know it extremely well. In summer, it's just unbearable. The players couldn't play. It would be dangerous, in fact, not only for the players, but for any spectators. So the time of year that it is, the weather's perfect. It's absolutely perfect for football. It's warm. It's in the evenings, it can be quite chilly, but no more than that. And the World Cup itself should be amazing because all these stadia are literally within about 20 miles of each other. So they've got brand new stadia. They're thoroughly prepared and ready to go. How does it affect the Premier League? No doubt it's going to affect the Premier League. It's going to be interesting, though, because there's always that argument at the end of a season when the European Championships are played and the World Cups are played, that players have got fatigue. They're carrying injuries. They are perhaps not at their sharpest and best. Being in November, December, there's no excuse for that argument anymore. I mean, this is going to be a superbly contested World Cup finals. The Premier League have to work it out. And as do other football nations, how they run their domestic leagues. But it's the same for the majority. So it'll happen. It'll come and go. I suspect that, for that month, the Premier League will be suspended. But remember, those players will be away for a lot more than the 4 weeks. It'll be away. They'll be away for at least 6 to 7 weeks. So that's a big chunk of time. We'll have to see how they do the maths on the fixtures. But they always seem to find a way. We tend to get through the seasons, when there's been problems before. COVID, for example, we carried on, we got there. So I expect it to be the same. But it's going to be a brilliant World Cup, believe me. It's going to be different. It's going to be unusual. The time difference is about plus 3 hours from the UK. So it will be you know, be ideal for us to watch games. It won't be difficult. So I'm looking forward to it. And it's, everybody's talking about this England squad. Can they go and win it? I think there's a great possibility that they're going to be up there, at least to the semi-finals. I think we expect that now, don't we, of the England group, that they will get to semi-finals because the squad is so good.
You'll be interested to see what the boozers look like for an 11 p.m. kickoff if England get go the distance.
Yeah,
I'm sure there'll be plenty of they'll be pretty lively, to say the least. Obviously, the Christmas period is one of the busiest periods of the Premier League calendar, Dean. So I think the World Cup final in 2022 is set to be on the 18th of December, which is normally when that crazy period of Christmas kicks in. And you'll know what it's like having to go into train on Christmas Day afternoon, you know, having to leave the kids at home and stuff. It's tough. And it's one of the things that professional footballers have to do that a lot of people from the outside looking in don't really get to see.
It is. I mean, that like you say, that festive period is, there's a lot of games within that that festive period. You're playing probably every two or three days. Like you say, you have time away from the family, but that's part and parcel of being a professional footballer. You become used to that, training on Christmas Day, then staying in a hotel, and then playing the game the next day, then playing every couple of days. Then the FA Cup comes in early January as well. So it's a tough schedule. It really is for a player, but like I said, you do get used to it, and that you're fully aware of that, and it just becomes part of your routine. Like you mentioned before, us footballers enjoy our routine. We enjoy knowing what we're going to do and being told where to be at what time and what to wear and what to eat. You know, we fight against it, but I think we actually quietly enjoy that as well. So you remove that temptation as well when you're with your family around Christmas time of probably not eating too much or drinking too much. So look, it's good. I used to enjoy playing in the Christmas period. I really, really did. Because, I mean, Trevor would tell you, as a footballer, you love playing games. That's what you want to do. Training is part and parcel of it. But if you're playing games in front of the fans and you're enjoying it, especially when you're winning as well, it's one of the best times of the year. So yeah, like, I never had a problem with it at all.
Yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from. Part and parcel of the game, for sure. But fascinating to hear Trevor's insight from over in Qatar and what their perspectives are and what we should expect for the World Cup. And actually, it'll probably be upon us quicker than we realise. Time for a quick break here on Football Social Daily. Afterwards, we're going to be talking about Cristiano Ronaldo, who has taken back his number 7 shirt at Manchester United. The Premier League gave the club special dispensation, but the shirt numbers really mean that much to former players. We'll find out next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. The Dugout. Premier League preview. Football Social Daily.
Welcome back to the podcast. This is The Dugout from Football Social Daily, a brand new Saturday podcast, bringing you insight from people who have been there and done it, people who have played the game. Delighted to say for today's episode, Dean Hammond and Trevor Stephen are alongside me. And we're going to talk about shirt numbers now, because Cristiano Ronaldo has made headlines once again for, well, I guess reclaiming his number 7 shirt at Manchester United. It was the shirt that he made iconic to himself, but it had already been worn by the likes of Beckham and Cantona before that at Old Trafford. Obviously, Daniel James has left Manchester United. He signed for Leeds. He had the number 21 shirt. Cavani had the 7. Now, Cavani shifted to the number 21, which is what he wears for Uruguay, which has freed up the number 7 for Cristiano Ronaldo. Obviously, commercially and with all the shirt sales and stuff, this is going to be great for Manchester United in recouping funds, and it's, you know, great for the club from a marketing point of view as well. But I wanted to ask, as former pros yourselves, do shirt numbers really mean that much to you? I'll start with you, Dean, because you've played for a few different clubs. And when you do make a move from one club to the other, how does it actually work? Are you able to pick the shirt number you want? Are you told by the agent, the manager? What's the process? Because it's a bit of a strange one, which really seems to grab a lot of attention these days.
Well, I think to start with, it depends on the player and the profile of the player. I probably never had that privilege to be able to demand a squad number or a number that I wanted. But it probably comes to availability and when you sign for the club. So if you're signing in the summer, there could have been players that depart, so there'll be squad numbers available that you can probably get a choice from, of 3 or 4 or 5 numbers. If you come in January, again, there'll be a limited amount because they might have to add a number to the squad. But I do know of players that have requested numbers or favour numbers, usually the more attacking players or the strikers that maybe want that iconic number nine or number seven, like you've mentioned about Cristiano Ronaldo. But no, not myself. I mean, I've worn all different types of numbers from 35 down to probably number four as well. I remember the time I signed for Sheffield United, actually, and there was two numbers available, number nine and number 35. And I just thought, I can't take the number nine because I'll be the lowest scoring number. So I had to go for the number 35, which again, didn't sit too well with me because the other end of the scale of the squad numbers. But look, at the end of the day, it's just a number. And it doesn't mean too much in my eyes, but Trevor might say different to some players, it does mean a lot. And it could really change the mentality of a player that if they don't have that number, and it could have all different meanings to it. But yeah, personally, I probably never had that luxury and usually just went for one that associated my position, put it that way.
Think of the possibilities though, Dean. You could have had the DH9 brand, you could have had your own perfume range and all of that stuff.
Not sure that would have taken off, to be honest.
What about you then, Trevor? Obviously, it's almost unrecognisable, this shirt culture from when you were playing. So what's your take on this whole situation? Yeah. Are players of your era less bothered, so to speak, about the shirt numbers, or was it still a big thing back then?
No, it was just different. No, it was different because back in the day, it was 1 to 11. So numbers were even associated directly with positions on the field.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can't compare the modern day game with those days. I mean, we wouldn't even be allowed to swap a shirt back in the old days.
The kit man be on you.
Yeah, the kit man would be right in amongst your bag if you try to take something that, you know, he's already accounting for. So... So there was none of that. I started as a number eight when I was at Burnley because I was playing central midfield. But when I went to Everton, I was still quite young, 19. The number seven was mine. So that was right midfield. It is where you think it would be, you know, number seven or wide on the right. So I sort of had that for 7 years and rarely played a game that I wasn't wearing the number seven. Yeah, I kind of identified myself a bit with the number. I wore it as well when I went to Rangers. I wore it sometimes playing for England, but rarely. Brian Robson was the holder of the number seven shirt when I first started playing. But when I went to Marseille, I just took anything they would give me. I was so thrilled to be there. Right? So I ended up playing number six, and I was never a number six, you know, which is like a holding midfield player. I mean, what's that all about? So the numbers weren't relevant there, but I do regard my lucky number as seven, and I understand, of course, it was inevitable with Ronaldo that he has to be given that number seven because, as you rightly said, he's got a magnificent legacy already in that shirt, and the monetary side, the merchandising, the brand spread that will add to Manchester United's coffers. So, yeah, numbers not that important, but personally, I like the number seven, and it would be my preference.
I'm glad you've said that, because actually I think it lends itself to a deeper conversation, which we had on yesterday's podcast, about what shirt numbers mean to fans and the club culturally. So, I mean, you know, in the Northeast, Newcastle United, very famous number nine shirt, Jackie Milburn, Alan Shearer, etc., etc. Manchester United, another good example, seven worn by Beckham, Best, Cantona, Cristiano Ronaldo. When you do sign for a club, Dean, I mean, how important is it that you understand the culture of the club? Because as we touched upon on yesterday's show, I mean, Angel Di Maria has kind of been speaking down about the seven shirt, and it's been met with a fair bit of criticism from United fans because so many legendary players have worn that shirt. So actually, when you do put pen to paper on a contract at a new club, is it important you do immerse yourself in the culture and some of the smaller, finer details that actually probably mean more to fans than people realise?
100%. I think, yeah, the culture of the football club and what it means to the players and the fans is very, very important. So understanding that as a player, I think, can really, really help you in terms of building a relationship with the fans, because I think that's important. As a player, really, you may not want to admit it, but you all want to be accepted. You want to be welcomed. And it helps your performance, and you don't want to get off on the wrong foot and kind of act against the tradition of a football club. So whether it's a squad number, whether it's the way you play, whether it's the way you conduct yourself, all different things are very, very important. And I think that's really, really important when you've got players that have come through the academies, clubs, or have been at clubs for a long period of time. When a new player comes in, they can help introduce that. They can help explain that. And I think that's how you build a culture at a football club or within a dressing room. There's a respect towards the club that you're playing for. You know, they're paying your wages. You're there to help them. You're there to improve as a player. So I think it all combines well, and it's very, very important. And it can get lost in this day and age. And that's, I don't think always think that's on purpose. That could be players from different cultures coming in, from different countries, and just not quite understanding it. So it's very important to communicate those values. And, you know, any successful club are successful because they're together on and off the pitch and there's a real understanding.
Yeah, I love that. And it's an excellent comment you make there. And actually, Trevor, you'd know better than most, having gone over to Marseille and played, you know, in a different country other than England. Was that something you had to experience, obviously, going over to the south of France and sort of finding somewhere to live and all of the sort of smaller, finer details?
Yeah, I mean, going abroad was something I always wanted to do. But, you know, in all honesty, I was already 27. I was well into my football career. So I was pretty worldly on what would be expected of me. And I was aware of what Marseille was as a football club. They had brilliant footballers. You know, Chris Waddle was there. Papin, Didier Deschamps was playing. I knew what I was walking into there. But what my mind goes back to when, you know, if you think every club has got a way of playing. You know, you used to talk about the West Ham way or the Liverpool way or Man United play this way. And Dean was right. When players come in, particularly from abroad, they've got to get onto that rhythm of understanding what the bigger picture is with that football club. I remember when I went to Everton at 19, coming away from Burnley, and Howard Kendall was the manager. And the first game that I played, which was home against Stoke City, and he said, he didn't give me any advice. He just gave me some words in my ear. He said, don't worry about anything. Just make sure you win your first tackle, right? Get your foot in, because they'll love you. They'll love you if you win your tackle. And it doesn't matter if you miscontrol it. If you miscontrol it, go and win the ball and they will love it for you winning it back. So you start to get, that's what they want. They want 100% commitment, you know, and be prepared to go and do that. So you learn very, very quickly, and you have to learn quickly. And Howard Kendall's words to me are something that, you know, I never forgot. You know, make sure that you're competitive. And the fans will love you no matter what. And, you know, they love a tryer. Every football fan loves a tryer.
It's funny, isn't it? The small, even small bits of advice that you picked up as a 19-year-old, you carried that all the way through. And, you know, we've seen it probably more now this season already in the first three games with fans back in the grounds that, you know, chasing back and winning a tackle or a nice piece of control. I mean, that gets the crowd up, gets the fans off of their seats, and that's exactly what football fans love. Just finally then on Cristiano Ronaldo, and we'll leave the shirt numbers to one side. I mean, a huge signing. I mean, the fact that the Premier League have effectively changed their rules to allow him to wear number 7 says it all, really, for me. How big of an impact do you think he could have, Dean? Because obviously he's 36. Some people are saying he's over the hill. I think he proved against the Republic of Ireland for Portugal the other night that he's far from that. It's exciting to say the least. How do you think he'll fare?
I think he'll be brilliant. I really, really do. I mean, a surprising stat, he was the leading goal scorer in Serie A last season. You know, and Chelsea have signed Lukaku and played, what, nearly 100 million for him. So, Ronaldo is Ronaldo. I think the way he conducts himself, how professional he is, it's not only going to benefit the team for now, it will benefit the team for the future. You think of Greenwood now, working with Ronaldo on a day-to-day basis, seeing how he conducts himself around the training ground, see how he keeps himself fit, be able to have those conversations with Ronaldo over the dinner hall and the extra training he does. I think that, again, will be a huge plus. And Greenwood, I agree with what Trevor said. I think he's going to be a superb talent. I really, really, I do. And, you know, I think he's got so much to bring. He'll play centrally. I don't think he's that player now that will play wide and he'll be taking players on. But, you know, he doesn't need two free chances. You get him one chance, he's probably going to score. So I think he'll have a huge impact. And whether he can take them to a title, that will be interesting to see. I'm sure it'd be interesting to see how Solskjaer manages him, because I can imagine Ronaldo wanting to play every game, FA Cup, League Cup, Champions League, Premier League. But he is 36. So will he try and, you know, manage that? Will Cristiano like that? I'm not sure. So that will be interesting. But I think we'll see some fantastic goals from him. I think Manchester United will challenge. Whether they will get the silverware, I'm not too sure, because the other teams are very, very strong as well. But I think it's a, from a commercial point of view, from a football point of view, I think it's a brilliant bit of business for Manchester United.
I've just got visions now, Dean, of Ronaldo away at Barrow or something in the third round of the FA Cup. Can you imagine that? Yeah, it would be great fun, wouldn't it? What about you, Trev? How do you see his arrival at Old Trafford? Because, you know, I wouldn't say it came out of the blue, because ever since he left Old Trafford, he's constantly linked with a move back. But the fact it came so late in the window amidst Man City's interest as well, it almost feels like the perfect storm in terms of that positivity boost for Manchester United.
I agree with what Dean's saying there. I mean, this guy is a phenomenon. He is, you know, along with Lionel Messi, just on a different level. And I mean, like two or three levels above anybody else. It's just the fact that he can do what he's doing at 36-year-old. We saw during the week his two goals, his two headers for Portugal. You know, in the last few minutes of the game, when a 36-year-old should be feeling the pace a little bit, not actually being able to turn the game at that stage. So I'm looking forward to watching him. You know, he doesn't play well every game. You know, he has off matches. He doesn't affect some games. He can be a little bit lazy, you know, for the purist's eyes. But what he brings is excitement. He brings a level of desire into the game that I've rarely seen. Someone who is prepared to do everything, not only for himself, but for the team. And you see his reaction, you know, for Portugal. He's getting the fans together. Everything's about the team. So what I love about him is he's far more vocal than a Messi. We don't really hear him talking. But what I see from Ronaldo is a magnificent humbleness about himself. What he does on the field, he's a performer, he's an entertainer, and we see the goal celebrations. But I think his teammates love him. And there was only open arms for him to go to Manchester United. And all the players there know that that's probably one chance less that they've got in getting into the starting 11, because Ronaldo's there. But I think he brings an edge to the squad. I think they've bought very well, Sancho, Varane and Ronaldo. He could be the missing part of the jigsaw for them. To win a trophy, I think, this year in the Premier League, or to win the Premier League, it's got to be so difficult. I don't think I've been so excited about a Premier League at all. This for me, has got to be the best one ever. Fans are back. You know, Lukaku's back. Ronaldo's back. All the clubs have been buying just that bit better quality. And it's exciting.
Yeah, we'll talk about it in the next part of the show, but I live in Manchester and you should have seen the queue outside the Old Trafford Megastore this morning. Honestly, it must have been about 500 people waiting to get in there to get their Ronaldo merchandise. Cristiano back at Manchester United. Trevor's excited for the new Premier League season. We are three games in and possibly four potential title contenders. We'll talk about who we think could go the distance next here on The Dugout on Football Social Daily.
The Dugout, Premier League preview, Football Social Daily. Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Niall. Former Premier League players Dean Hammond and Trevor Stephen are alongside me, and we're going to talk about the start to the new campaign. Fans back in the grounds after too long away due to the coronavirus pandemic. It is currently the international break and we've only played three games, but there's been some impressive performances and some not so impressive performances, as is often the case at these early stages of the season. So then, after three games, Dean, who's impressed you the most? One of your old clubs, Brighton, have certainly caught the eye with the way they've started the campaign. Spurs are top of the league. How are you seeing things so far? How does the landscape look for you?
I think it's going to be a really interesting Premier League. I really, really do. And, you know, I think Chelsea are very, very strong. I think they've started well. Like you've mentioned, Brighton there have got two results within three games, two wins, and also a home win as well. I think that's important for them because they just don't win many games at home. So that's been important for them. And West Ham as well. I think it's important for West Ham to have started well, and they really have. And I've been to watch them live. The atmosphere at the stadium was fantastic. 60,000 fans against Leicester when they won 4-1 were so impressive. And I think that, you know, they could have another really productive and good season. Whether they've got the strength and depth to attack it in all fronts with the cup competitions and being in Europe. But I think they could, you know, finish in the top six again. Whether they can push the top four, I'm not too sure. But Spurs have started well. And I think that's the interesting one. I think you have to give huge credit to the manager there. You know, what he's had to deal with. You know, there's question marks over his appointment to start with. I don't think he was like obviously the first or second or even maybe the third choice to come in. The Harry Kane situation, he's dealt with that brilliantly, kept it all in-house and just kept it private, which obviously I don't think happens too much in modern day football. And they've started the season with what? Three wins, three 1-0 wins. And, you know, they've beaten the champions in Man City. They've beaten Wolves, his old club, which is always an emotional experience. And they've not conceded a goal. So they've been very, very impressive. And it's going to be interesting. I think this one will be a challenge between three or four clubs this season, you know, with the majority of Chelsea, Man City, Manchester United, Liverpool. Liverpool, an interesting one. I'm interested in because they haven't made many signings and there's a few grumblings about that and a few question marks over that. But with the players that they've got coming back, you know, Van Dijk, can he get back to the form? You know, probably the best defender in the world. Jordan Henderson's coming back. The front three are exciting again, look hungry again. But I think there's the African Cup of Nations, so a couple of them will disappear for a period. So, yeah, lots to play for this year.
Yeah, I like what you say about Liverpool, and I agree. I think 1-11, they're as strong as any team in the Premier League. But, you know, is the question mark around Liverpool what they've got in reserve off the bench? Is the squad depth as good? I like also what you say about Leicester. I think if they can ride through this patch at the moment where I think they've got eight first team players out with injury, the majority of them centre halves or at the back anyway, that's never easy in a Premier League where there are so many good attacking players. I quite like as well that the thoughts on Tottenham, because, you know, we talk about potential title contenders for this season, Trevor, and we keep talking about the both of the Manchester clubs, Chelsea and Liverpool, but Tottenham are top at the moment. And, you know, they're probably not quite as good as the others that we mentioned, but they've certainly got quality. They've kept hold of Kane. Son is a very good player and they've got a new hungry manager. So, you know, maybe they could be the outlier for this season. Who knows?
Could be. Obviously, keeping Harry Kane stabilises the club, because it was in danger of, you know, not sinking, but being on really stormy conditions. So the fact that he's there is a huge boost for them. And in all honesty, I think he's happy to be there. He will be delighted with the start. And why not continue the run? You know, when you go on that momentum, you know, Dean knows what it's like. You know, you win a game, you want the next game to come around quickly because you want back-to-back, you want to win. And, you know, you start to put games together like Tottenham have done early in the season, you know, that will stick in their minds from now till the end of the season. They can perform, and Nuno has done a tremendous job, as Dean again said correctly. He wasn't the number one choice by a long margin for the Tottenham fans, and he had to try and deal with the Harry Kane issue. So it's been brilliant from them. I look at the league and I'm thinking, God, there's 10 teams literally. Well, you'd normally have an Arsenal up there in that 10, but, you know, what's going on at Arsenal? I mean, nobody really knows. It's just like a rudderless.
It's a shambles.
It's a rudderless yeah. ship, isn't it? And you don't know what you're going to get from them, but you certainly don't get 90 minutes football from them. You get bits and bobs, and that's why they're in the position that they're in. But, you know, Everton will fancy themselves of being in the chance for the European place. Leicester, certainly. West Ham. Again, West Ham have... I kind of expected a dip at the start of this season because they achieved so much last year. And, you know, they haven't got Jesse Lingard, who was the impetus from January for their great run. And David Moyes has done a brilliant job. You know, it's a funny old world, the management game, isn't it? You know, David Moyes has been to several clubs. club. Sometimes he's successful, sometimes he's not. He seems to have found the right conditions to work at West Ham, and that's not been the case for West Ham managers. But David Moyes fits the bill there. And again, as Dean said, the stadium that they've got, at last they've got over, you know, the old Upton Park, Bullen Road. Right? They've got over that, and the fans have moved on, and it's looking a very strong club now. So if you'd asked me who I think's going to win it, though, I said at the start Chelsea, and that was before Lukaku. So I just think what Tuchel's done between his appointment and now, you know, Champions League, you know, it's a cup competition. It's been proven in the past that they can be won by an outlier, as you might call it. But I just fancy them. I think he's got great motivational skills. I think his players love him. They play for him. They've got some terrific players in every position. Every position they've got covered. And Lukaku's the icing on the cake. So I expect them to be up there. But as I said at the start, so excited. This could go any way. And I expect it to keep changing like a one-armed bandit. You know, these teams are just going to keep sort of changing places, you know, from one week to the next. But I think we're going to be spoiled this season, and I can't wait.
I hope so. And I think a lot of people are in agreement with you, Trevor, when you say Lukaku might just tip the scales in Chelsea's favour. Interestingly enough, we've mentioned the names of four managers on the show today: Rafa Benitez, Nuno Espirito Santo, Thomas Tuchel and David Moyes, all four of which, Dean, are up for the Premier League Manager of the Month award. So if you were in charge of handing out the gongs, who would you be giving it to as Manager of the Month for August?
I think they've all started fantastically, really, really well. And it's a difficult choice, it really is, because you would expect Chelsea to be up there. You'd probably expect the results they've got. But I think they've been brilliant the way they've started, you know, from winning the Champions League to signing Lukaku. I just think it's a really well-run football club now, and he's done very, very well. David Moyes, we've mentioned, and Benitez as well. You know, he's gone into Everton, and there's almost probably a lot of the fans probably wanting him to fail, to be honest. But he's a brilliant manager. You know, he's been successful wherever he's been, and there's a lot of pressure on him. You know, I watched the first game against Southampton, and Southampton dominated him in the first half. You know, went in 1-0 up. Everton didn't really create a lot. And there was some negativity around the place at Goodison Park. And that's surprising with the fans being back. But, you know, did they get booed off? I think there was some hostility, you know. But they came out second half and scored within 2 or 3 minutes. Won the game 3-1 and then had a brilliant game away at Leeds. And then won at the weekend as well. So I would probably say Benitez, just because of the negativity around his appointment. And he's come in, been very professional, been himself, and he's building the team. I like his signings, you know, Townsend, Damari Gray. You know, Damari Gray at Leicester is a talented boy, and if they can get the best out of him, I think, what did they pay, £2 million for him? Something like that. It's ridiculous. And they've got a good squad there. So I think they'll be pushing up, you know, top six, maybe top eight, and he started very, very well. So credit to him. I think he's started very, very well.
You can say what you want about Rafa, Trevor, but as you've already touched upon, the man's got a thick skin. He knows how to deal with the flack, and he also knows how to get the job done. So if Dean's going for Rafa Benitez, being a former Everton man yourself, would you be in the same camp? Are you going for Rafa?
I have to, don't I, really? Because you know, Dean summed it up, you know, perfectly well there. My eyes immediately drawn to Nuno at Tottenham because of the three back-to-back wins. And there was kind of a low expectancy of Tottenham. But if you look at Rafa, and Dean said it, the pressures that he was under were just incredible. And he's right again when he says that some fans want him to fail. And I always felt that he had to do well at the outset. And it's hard. The start of a season is hard. I played many seasons where we lost the first game, and then you get a draw in the second, and you're going into your third game trying to get a win, and the confidence is pretty low, and you scrape a result, and then you get going. But Everton have got going. The fans are silently or quietly chuffed to bits that they've got 7 points, and they don't want to give Rafa too much respect for that. Put it down to the players. Rafa will get it when they start losing games, of course. But yeah, I'd give it to Rafa for the start he's made, and it would absolutely make the day of Mashiri and Bill Kenwright, I would imagine, on the Everton board.
Yeah, definitely silence a few critics if one of those big blocks of metal turn up at Goodison Park and end up being placed on a mantelpiece somewhere. Right, that's it for today's Football Social Daily, the first edition of The Dugout with Dean Hammond and Trevor Stephen. Thank you very much, gents, for joining me. Really appreciate your company, and hopefully when we next have you on, we'll have more exciting Premier League action to talk about. If you like the show and this is your first time listening, why not hit subscribe? That way you won't miss another episode of the podcast again. We are the only show with a new episode every single day of the Premier League season. That is 7 days a week, right throughout the Top Flight campaign. So get involved and hit subscribe. But that's it for today on The Dugout, and we'll catch you next time on Football Social Daily.
The Dugout, Premier League preview, Football Social Daily.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.